Ever gone to bed hungry? How'd you sleep? Ever go to work hungry? How'd you perform? Ever go to school hungry? How'd you learn? President Biden held a conference on hunger, nutrition, and health last week. His administration announced a plan to try and tackle food insecurity and diet-related diseases like obesity, diabetes, and hypertension. The president's proposals include changes to nutrition labels and expanding meals for children both in and out of school.
Because in every country in the world, in every state in this country, no matter what else divides us, if a parent cannot feed a child, there's nothing else that matters to that parent. If you look at your child and you can't feed your child, what the hell else matters?
We're learning more about some of the causes and potential solutions for hunger and nutritional issues in Wisconsin and the United States at large. And we want to hear what you think at 1-800-642-1234. See issues with hunger in your community? Maybe you work at a school or in healthcare or a nonprofit organization. What do you see? Share it with us, please. Or what about nutrition problems? Are you dealing with rising rates of obesity or diabetes in your area? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, Andrew Reese, is Associate Director for Research in the Epistemic Analytics Lab at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research, and he's a fellow in the Department of Medical History and Bioethics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's the author of the book Eating to Learn, Learning to Eat, The Origins of School Lunch in the United States. Andrew, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us, Beth Olson, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. Beth, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And Beth, I'll begin with you. What did you see from the President's Conference on Nutrition and Food Insecurity last month? Evidently, it's the second ever that we've ever held. What came of it? What did you see?
What I felt was so different about what we've been doing in the past is he really tackled hunger with a much broader lens. So in the past, I think we did a pretty good job of putting together programs that helped feed people that were hungry. But he's looking at it much more broadly about how do we bring families up, which is why I think he talked about some of the economic programs. Now, I'm not as familiar with those, but of course, being able to provide for your family will do a long, go a long ways towards helping people not be hungry. I think he also looked at it across agencies in the government, but also public-private partnerships. He looked at driving it down to the local level where people know what's best for them. And then I think the other really big point he brought out is hunger isn't, you know, distributed uniformly across our population. We have people that are very much at risk. People of color are more likely to be hungry or food insecure. But he also brought up disabled people, elderly people, people with many children that are in school. When schools shut down, they may be extra hungry, but also things like our LGBTQI plus community and rural populations. So I think he really recognized the broad nature of the problem and then the different kinds of people and the different ways it might be affecting them.
And Andrew, I want to ask you about the story from the WPR News this afternoon about the loss of universal free lunch and how some Wisconsin school districts are now seeing some students skipping meals. How big of an issue is hunger in Wisconsin as compared to the rest of the country? And give us some perspective of how we got to this point, please.
Sure. Yeah. So it's a real problem. For the last several years, schools have benefited from a temporary program that allowed them to provide essentially universal free meals to students and even to students' families. And that went away this past summer. And we've seen both in Wisconsin and nationwide a real decline then in ability to participate in that program. There have been a few states that have introduced legislation to guarantee universal free meals. I believe California, Vermont, and Maine up to this point. But other states, it's basically reverted back to the pre-pandemic system where either schools had to qualify through community eligibility or individual students had to qualify for free or reduced price meals. And that's making it harder for many families to participate in one of the key nutrition programs for children in this country.
Andrew, from your position, Associate Director for Research in the Epistemic Analytics Lab at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research. Is this money well spent? Is this an investment that would see a return on investment? Or is a universal free lunch program giving things away that may not be necessary or could be considered wasteful?
Yeah, so most of the research suggests that it would be highly beneficial. There's research on benefits to children's health. There's research on improvements in future earning potential. There's a host of research on improvements in education. And so, most of the research suggests that a universal free meal program has significant benefits for children in school. But as with many, nutrition initiatives, sort of at the policy level, the debate is often less about whether something like school meals are beneficial, but the question of how much it will cost and whether the cost benefit works out, the way that people want. And so much of the debate about whether we should have a universal free meal program nationwide or even at a given state revolves around, whether the costs justify the benefits.
Andrew Ruiz is Associate Director for Research at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research, and Beth Olson, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. Our guest invites you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Where do you see food insecurity across Wisconsin and beyond the schools? But Beth, I want to ask you about the Universal Free Lunch Program and the story from WPR News this afternoon of students now going without lunch without this universal program. You'd mentioned before that food insecurity isn't across the board, that it's in certain pockets, in certain places, and that where we're seeing it is, affected differently depending on who you are and where you are. So how can a universal free lunch, or where do we begin to find food security, and we can start with kids, that that can be considered a sound investment going forward for all?
Yeah, I think one of the things that President Biden spoke about and is in their report is looking locally at schools. Can we connect them to local foods so that when kids have school lunch, it's not only local foods, which help local farmers, but it might be more likely to be foods that they're familiar with, that are a part of their culture and a part of their community. I think the other part is removing some of that stigma of getting free lunch so that every child, whether they are having a low income, less income in their family or not, can access that lunch without feeling that there's any stigma or shame. Another thing he talked about, which I thought was really interesting, is let's recruit from our communities into food service. It's being reported that there isn't enough food service employees to cook foods for children. They're getting packaged foods because there isn't enough people to cook. He talked about, and in his report, it's discussed about recruiting and training local people and providing them with quality jobs. So at the same time as cooking good food for our children, we're employing perhaps their parents and other people in their community and allowing them to have the income that they can begin to provide for their families too.
It's interesting to me that not only are we talking about food insecurity, but at the same time, we're talking about obesity. And Andrew, could you square this for us? How is it that there is a connection between food insecurity in this country as well as obesity?
Yeah, so it's obviously a very complicated issue, but when we're talking about children in schools, as many as 10% of them are in households where there is regular food insecurity, where their parents don't necessarily know where the next meal is coming from or can't guarantee that there will be food available for all meals. And that's not inconsistent with there being large rates of obesity and other diet-related diseases, in the same population. As Beth pointed out, right, these things are not symmetric across populations. And also, it's important to note that, some people are getting enough food if we just look sort of at gross calories or other sort of measures, but they're not necessarily getting the kind of food they needed. As Beth was saying, right, that many schools are struggling right now, for example, to sort of meet standards for school meals because of labor shortages and because of supply chain issues and a whole host of other things that make planning, you know, healthful and appetizing meals for kids much, much harder. And so all of these issues are kind of entangled in different ways. But, you know, one of the things that's really important about the White House conference is that it's helping to bring national attention, not just political attention, but orient the public towards a lot of these issues, which has the potential, as it did in 1969, to really mobilize support for really expanding and overhauling how we think about nutrition policy in this country.
And Andrew, that 1969, that was our first, and at least until the latest one last week, our first ever conference on food insecurity and diet-related diseases?
It was the first sort of under that title, but it's also important to remember that there were White House conferences on, for example, child health and protection that have significant nutrition components as well. But yes, it was the first that really focused on hunger and nutrition. You know, it really mobilized not only popular support, but political support for a broad range of child and adult nutrition support programs, many of which we still have today. You know, but these are also programs that need to be reauthorized constantly, and that sometimes languishes. You know, there are several bills right now that are part of that that are still sort of working their way through the process in Congress. And so it's also important to remember that these kinds of conferences provide great sort of activation energy for mobilization, but there's sort of a long, difficult road ahead if we actually want to realize a lot of those recommendations.
Andrew Wyss is the Associate Director for Research in the Epistemic Analytics Lab at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research. Also joining us, Beth Olson, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. Invite you to join us as well at 1-800-642-1234. Do you bristle at the thought of universal free lunches? Do you not see them as an investment, or do you understand or have perhaps benefited from them in the past? Have you experienced hunger yourself? What was it like, and how do you overcome it? 1-800-642-1234. Could the solution be as simple as food? You can also email us ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation next on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and right now we're picking up our conversation on nutrition and hunger after President Biden held a conference on the issues last week. And our guests are nutritional science professor Beth Olson and education researcher Andrew Ruiz from UW-Madison. We'd like to invite you as well to join us at 1-800-642-1234. What do you think about the Biden administration's proposals to improve nutrition and address food insecurity? Do you support expanding meal programs at schools? You want to see wider eligibility for food stamps or the WIC program in Wisconsin? What other solutions do you have? 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Gary in Hartford this afternoon. Gary, you're on Central Time.
Hello. Yeah, I'm wondering about the school lunches where there's so much waste in the schools and we have meals that are one size fits all. We've got meals that go to one small child that's also supposed to feed one of our older adult child, and yet there doesn't seem to be an even distribution of calories across the board.
Ah, the same caloric intake for a kindergartner and a sixth grader, and then the amount of waste that we find from our food programs. Where would you like to begin, Beth Olson?
Yeah, I think looking at using local foods and also looking at cultural preferences, as well as, I think, you know, just some really good old-fashioned home cooking versus some of the packaged foods that people are needing to use right now because of shortages would go a long way towards waste. I think in demonstration projects where there's more involvement of the children in the recipes, where there's more cooking, where the children get more nutrition education, making use of things like community gardens really increases the amount of food that children eat and really decreases waste.
Andrew Ruiz, what do you see there when it comes to school lunches, the amount of food waste we have, maybe beyond the cafeteria, but just in our own kitchens, and the one-size-fits-all approach for school lunch programs?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Beth on that. You know, the research is very, very clear that the more that a school lunch program, you know, incorporates students into not just, you know, the food line, but into the preparation, into the planning, you know, the more the programs are integrated with education, and the more they are based on a kind of scratch cooking model that can be much more sensitive to local populations. There tends to be quite a lot less food waste and a lot more participation, both of which are significant benefits. And this is, you know, this is true in many cases in home kitchens as well, that getting kids interested in foods and food preparation early is a great way to get them to try new foods. It's a great way to get them to cultivate a taste for a broader range of foods. And it's a great way to have conversations with kids about, you know, where the food comes from and issues like food waste and preparation.
And Andrew, a follow-up here. It seemed from the conference last week that the Biden administration is leading into the idea of food as medicine. How do you see that concept?
Yeah, so the recommendation that that the government can support things like nutrition prescriptions and support for meals that are sort of medically designed to help people with different health conditions was fairly prominent in the White House conference. You know, of course, historically, it's a very old idea. Food as medicine has been practiced for thousands of years across pretty much all cultures that we know anything about. And it continues to be a sort of focus of you know, many for many advocates, especially nutrition advocates. You know, one of the biggest challenges is that medical training still involves very little training on nutrition and on sort of the ways in which health professionals can support patients in particular dietary changes or adjustments that they may need to make for their health. And so that's a really big area of opportunity.
And Beth Olson, also from last week's conference, the Biden administration announced a proposal to move nutrition labels from the back to the front of food packaging. What good would that do?
The proposal was about a front of package label, and there are many of those already going on. So we have our side panel, which has the nutrition facts, the nutrition in the food, and the ingredient listing. I personally think one of our efforts should be to help people read those two places of information. They're very regulated, they're very accurate, and I think provide most of the information that people need. It is a lot of information, which is why I think people are interested in having some symbols on the front. Right now, there's a lot of information elsewhere on the label. Some of it regulated, some of it not. Some of it's just advertising. And so it can mislead people into thinking they're picking up a healthier product than they are. So I'm in support of it, but I think that it's just one more tool, and I don't think necessarily is going to be the answer to everything.
We had talked earlier about the president's conference last week on nutrition, food insecurity, and food health, and how it was, you know, it get attention, but after that comes the important part of legislation and furthering something through. And some of the president's proposals face some political hurdles. The conference last week was called partisan by some Republicans. In fact, Senator Mike Braun, the Republican from Indiana, who sponsored the legislation to fund the conference, while he appeared at an initial hearing, did not appear at the rest. There was some tepid response from the other side of the aisle last week. So is there a political, Andrew, do you see politically feasible anything that could get through Washington, D.C. that could help people in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest challenges, I think, of the proposed slate of policies is that the sort of highest impact ones are all ones that are going to need to get approved by Congress, you know, making permanent the child tax credit, universal free school meals, you know, expanding eligibility for SNAP. Some of the diet prescription coverage we were just talking about, and so on and so forth. And this is not a Congress right now that seems well positioned to pass any of those at this point. So I think, you know, one of the things that we want to look for coming out of a conference like this is to see how well it mobilizes existing groups. There's a lot of groups on the ground who are already, you know, and have been for a long time working for these kinds of goals. can this conference mobilize them to really help push these things through, a Congress and that may or may not be that willing to support them? And so I think that's going to be, the thing to really pay attention to in the coming year is how well this, this provides the activation energy for that kind of effort.
Beth Olson, do you understand some of the arguments against these proposals for food security and nutritional health? Could this be considered wasteful? Is there opportunity that could be left on the table here? Or is this just good old-fashioned partisanship as you see it?
I think something that people, perhaps the public doesn't understand, and as Andrew mentioned, having this publicity for the conference and our groups out on the ground working, perhaps we can also talk more to the public who elect our officials about what having good health, nutrition, health, physical activity means for the entire population. I've never heard a politician say that they would rather have an unhealthy workforce and a less productive workforce and a military that's, not well nourished or healthy. So I think when we start to talk about the things that make, the United States strong and the people within it strong, we're talking about a healthy children growing to be healthy and productive adults who work and pay taxes and take care of their families. And that's that these kind of programs support that. So I think when people begin to understand it's in all of our best interest that every one of us be as healthy and productive as we can, perhaps we can start to influence our politicians to see it the same way.
And Beth, what are some other brief potential solutions out there that could help address hunger and or nutrition in Wisconsin?
I think there's a lot of potential to the school, to local foods, to school initiatives, also to local school, to places like food banks. I think it helps both the farmers and it helps the people receiving the food. I also feel I need to promote Extension. I work with them and they just have wonderful programs and they are based in the community. So they recruit people to work for them that are from the community, understand local issues, they know where the people in their community go to school and work and where they go to church and what their stores are like and their parks are like.
We are out of time, but I appreciate the mention of the Extension this afternoon. Beth Olson, thank you so much for joining us. Andrew Ruiz, thank you as well to you.
Thank you for having me.
Andrew Ruiz, Associate Director for Research in the Epistemic Analytics Lab at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research, and Beth Olson is Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the Nutrition Sciences Department at UW-Madison. With us today, looking at the Biden administration's proposals to tackle hunger and nutrition issues in the United States.